Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I have a much requested and super special guest with us today. I am joined by the famous Jane Killian of Puppy Culture, and we are talking, well, I am in Lincoln City, Oregon at the St. Bernard National Specialty, and y'all might hear the ocean right outside my windows. Thank you for
joining me.
I know, it's beautiful. I can't open the window to look at it while I talk to you, or we'd really be blown away by the ocean noise. So, Puppy Culture is something that I have had requested by a number of listeners, and I'm thrilled for you to join us on the show, Jane.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Excellent. So, you know the drill. Give us the 411. How did this very cool thing sort of erupt in your life?
Well, my family's had Bull Terriers since 1982, and I've been breeding and showing Bull Terriers since 97 under the Madcap kennel name. And my husband and I breed dogs under the Madcap kennel name. And we are show breeders, but I also have this passion for performance sports with Bull Terriers, which, if you know Bull Terriers, that's an oxymoron.
I mean, it is definitely an oxymoron.
So I was working in corporate, and I wrote this book called When Pigs Fly, basically to help other people like me train their non-biddable dogs in agility and obedience and rally. And the book took off. It was a sensation. I guess a small but underserved demographic.
Right.
And I started getting a lot of requests to do seminars, and that end of the business quickly became so busy that I really had to make a choice about my job. And my husband and I discussed it, and I left my corporate job, and I went full-time to the dog training with the intention, first of all, of making a movie version, a video version of When Pigs Fly, because a lot of the questions I was getting about the book and the training methods really could be clarified with a video.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so meanwhile, we're having a litter. And I thought, wow, wouldn't it be fun to just video the developmental periods that Pat Hastings talks about in her book, Another Piece of the Puzzle. If there's any dog breeders, we all have it, right?
Right.
Laura, dog-eared,
right.
Looked at every page a million times. I thought, what a fun thing to make like a 20-minute video and just depict what these developmental periods look like. Well, 4 years later, we have an almost five-hour DVD on developmental periods in puppies and how to do certain protocols per developmental period. And that's what Puppy Culture is. Certainly, when I started researching it, when I started doing it, I thought it was going to be a 20-minute video, but I saw how deep this subject is. Every time I thought, well, this is just going to be a simple answer, I do this, I saw there was a lot of questions, there was a lot of back research, led me to reach out to a lot of scientists and veterinarians and experts and dog trainers. I mean, we flew all the way across the country from New Jersey to Georgia to Ohio to California to interview Gene Donaldson, Carmen Battaglia, Dr. Megan Herron. We contacted a lot of the people that did a lot of the research. And what we just found was that it's such a deep subject and so really poorly understood,
right,
that there was a need to have this kind of film. And sure enough, it wound up taking off and totally eclipsing the dog training business. And again, small but underserved demographic. And really, we walked into it accidentally.
I just think it's amazing that it's the same sort of thing we talk about, Pure Dog Talk. Like, where did this come from? Well, you know.
Right. I happened to be doing something else and then it happened.
And I love that. And so one of the things that I think we can talk about for our listeners particularly, and, you know, Pure Dog Talk has a pretty broad audience, but one of the things that I think is really fascinating, and I told you this when I emailed, I saw one of your ads talking specifically to experienced breeders who probably already have their sort of, if you will, protocol, right?
Right.
I'm guilty. I'm raising my hand guilty. I've got my protocol. Sounds just like yours. Bonus. Good for you. And then just walk away, right? So talk to us about why me, those of us in this category, should take a look at puppy culture, because I was quite impressed by what you had to say.
Okay, great question. So puppy culture, I didn't make up puppy culture. I didn't make up anything in it. What puppy culture really is the gift of wisdom that was passed to me by my mentors that I augmented with science and scientific experts.
Right.
It's what we all do, but more organized. So whereas before, even for myself, before I had puppy culture, I obviously did everything that's in puppy culture.
Right.
But I would just sort of do it by the seat of the pants. I mean, my mentors would call me and say, oh, today's day 28, do this. And I'd do that, and it seemed to work okay. And but then when I started looking into it more, when I really started researching it and trying to pin it down, I realized that there are all these developmental periods which are bounded by behavioral markers, and that just sort of doing things as you go along or as you have time, I mean, it's okay, but not optimal. And that, in fact, a lot of the things that I was doing at the wrong time and maybe not helping as much as I could have, or even hurting the puppies depending on when I was doing them. So this whole thing of developmental periods and pinning them down and being organized as far as a timeline, but not a temporal timeline, a behavioral timeline, became very important. And it is something that I still think is not clearly understood.
Yeah, and that's the piece that I love, because what you're describing is me, right? Like, I know I do this and this at this and this time and this and that and blah, blah, blah. But I love the idea of tying it to what the puppies are actually doing rather than on day five, you do such and such, right?
Exactly. I don't know if you know this study, but you know about the initial fear period study that came out, right? So what they found was that the initial fear response in puppies can vary per breed, average per breed, by as much as 16 days. So they studied Cavaliers, Yorkies, and German Shepherds. German Shepherds had the first at right around 5 weeks. Cavalier King Charles Spaniels did not have their initial fear response until almost 16 days later.
Crazy.
So that's number one, is to be observant. And within a breed, within a line, as anyone who's been breeding for a while knows, you do an outcross and you're like, whoa, what's going on here? This isn't what
Trust me, right? Yes.
Right. So turning the focus away from kind of rote doing things at a certain time, or this is our procedure and this is how we do it, to observing the puppy and really kind of getting in their heads is what puppy culture is all about. And it's transformative, not just for the puppies, but for the breeders, because the breeders start looking at the puppies almost more like a behaviorist would rather than a breeder. So rather than sort of just looking at them and saying, well, this one's fearful, or this one's this, or this one's that, it starts being, well, this is the behavior this puppy is exhibiting now, so that means that's where this puppy is, and this is what we can do to either improve that or move it along or not exacerbate that. I know these are very general things I'm saying, but...
No, but I think what you're saying is really important. And, you know, I had a litter of 12 puppies recently. That's about it, 2 years ago.
God bless you.
God bless me, yes, exactly. God bless my poor mama dog. And one of them was born with problems, and we had to take care of her specially. And, you know, there was such a huge, in 12 puppies, there's always going to be a really wide variety of temperaments, of how they respond to their universe. And so watching those puppies develop and trying to manage all of their needs, looking back on that, thinking, you know, how great would it have been if I had been smart enough to have picked up the puppy culture and applied it to that litter? I'm just sitting here thinking about it, thinking, boy, that would have been nice for this one or that one or the other one, you know?
Well, I have to say that's another thing about puppy culture, and in particular, the workbook.
Right.
I mean, it's stating the obvious in a lot of ways, but it helps to plan. And what we try to do in the workbook in particular is give you really solid timelines for saying, now is the time to line up people for 6 weeks from now to do this. Because if you try and line them up 2 days before, you're not going to get them. Like, We tried to back chain everything so that it's somewhat seamless.
Yeah, I like that because I'm always, you know, I do my little version of temperament testing and I do it at, you know, this point in time. And who's coming to help me with this?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
It's like I say in the workbook, everybody wants to help you with your puppies. There's not a person in this world, hardly, that if you say, hey, will you come over and help me with my puppies, they're not going to jump at the chance.
Right, right.
But also, everyone is scheduled months out these days. So if the minute you confirm pregnancy, you count out the weeks and say, okay, I know I'm going to need people, and you get people, and they'll do it for you.
Right.
And especially if you have a large litter.
Yeah.
You can get through all the protocols easily, but you need to be efficient. And I am not naturally an efficient person. I'm an artistic person. So this has been great for me too.
Right.
It's really what I wish somebody could have put into my hands when I had my first litter.
Yeah. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute.
How much is that doggy in the window?
Okay, crew. I hear it pretty much every day now. I love Pure Dog Talk, and that makes my heart happy, because I love doing it. I started hosting Pure Dog Talk as a way to reach out to members of our community with education and resources to enable you to succeed and move forward in your goals and ambitions. And your response has been literally overwhelming. The podcast has been downloaded well over 250,000 times to date. That's incredible. All of this information is free to exhibitors around the world at the touch of a button. But here's the reality check. Money really does make the world go round, guys. So I created a special patrons group. This funding source helps cover the expenses of audio editing and website hosting and technology and like that. Patrons keep Pure Dog Talk's fountain of knowledge flowing freely. And like the NPR of dogdom, our patrons support Pure Dog Talk with monthly gifts. We even offer advertising and sponsorship opportunities that you guys may not have known about. So drop me a note, laura@puredogtalk.com, and I'll let you know how you can help share the love. I think it's from your first litter to it's your 20th litter. Right? So what are you doing that you could do better?
Always.
I mean, you know, my puppies are pretty good. You know, they turn out this, that, and the other. I think, well, holy crap. What if I, you know?
It's always something else. And let me tell you, that's the other thing that I love about puppy culture is that it truly is a community and it is crowdsourced.
Right.
So the workbook, for instance, is a compilation. We have the Puppy Culture Discussion Group on Facebook. It's about 18,000 members, and they are top shelf. They're great, great conversations, great discussions. But what we immediately started seeing is, oh my gosh, like for instance, our puppies normally do enter into the curiosity period around 6 weeks old. Curiosity period being where they have the highest approach and lowest retreat. Proportionately, the least fear to curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a great time to do a lot of heavy in-home socialization. I don't take my puppies off premises at that age, but that's a whole other discussion.
Right.
So we do our puppy party then, which is basically we have people over, experienced people to work with and train the puppies. But what we were finding is that, for instance, the dachshunds, they're not ready until almost 8 weeks, or 7.5, that to try and do a, or even my friend with Norwich Terriers, 6 weeks is just way too young for this.
Right.
So again, what we did in the workbook is we took those behavioral markers, the original Scott and Fuller stuff, you know, the original studies, the big behavioral markers, and we broke it down into probably about 100 micro markers. Like, when is the puppy taking food from your fingers? I mean, you don't think of this as a behavioral marker, but it is. So when I say, hey, you know, I power up my puppies on the clicker at 4 weeks old, people with Chinese crests are saying, my puppies, or Tibetan Terriers are saying, my puppies don't even have teeth at 4 weeks old. They're not doing anything. They're still nursing.
Right.
So the workbook is, as much as puppy culture is the wisdom that was passed down to me, the workbook is true crowdsourced wisdom from a lot of different breeds. And I just love it. And it's constantly evolving. And it will continue to evolve. In fact, we did it in a loose leaf format, somewhat because we feel it's the best for breeders because they can customize how they want to use the book.
Sure.
But also because I'm certain that there will be updates and additions to this as we use it and as we learn more about different breeders and their different needs.
Well, and I love the concept, what you were just talking about, the major markers and then the sort of micro markers. And that, I think, is something that we could kind of dwell on a little bit here for our, you know, I'm at litter number 20, not litter number one. Those people, think back to your litters, think back to 4 weeks to 6 weeks and what you were seeing. And maybe you could give us some more specifics that would outline some of those periods.
The differences in the micro markers?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let me just give, all right, here's a great example, and speaking of outcrosses. So normally, my puppies will have a startle response, you know, when their ears open, so around 3 weeks old.
Right.
And then they won't, but you'll have a two-week window before they enter into their fear period, their initial fear period. So usually around 5 weeks, you'll see it. You'll see that. And the difference between startling and fear is sometimes subtle, but fear has a lot of associated behavioral posturing with it that we talk about it in the puppy mm-hmm, culture workbook, mm-hmm. that it's distinguishable from a startle, which some postulate a startle response doesn't even go through the brain. It just goes through the nervous system, through the spinal cord. So, yeah, whereas fear is a true emotional response, it's going into the brain, it's creating an emotional response. So there's a difference. So you have this window where you can encourage startle recovery and help almost exercise your puppy's ability to recover quickly. The gun dog people, this
yeah.
is just something, again, the wisdom of gun dog people that they always did this.
Mm.
Well, neurologically, it turns out there's a reason for it.
Well, I raise wire hair pointers. We bang the pans on the pen the whole
right.
time, you know.
Right. But what happens is that when you get into that initial fear period, there is that short period in there where it actually is a fear imprint period,
mm.
where now you actually need to back off.
And not run the pans. That's what I'm looking at.
And not run the pans. Yeah, right. So we don't have gun dogs, but what we do is we just drop things. We drop books,
right.
we drop
right.
pans.
Right.
And we look for a certain startle recovery, and it should be a startle and an immediate recovery. There should be no residual shaking, no crouching, no sustained emotional, you know, no outward indicia of sustained emotional response. It is an immediate, almost like we call it the puppy on the string. It's like the puppy's going along, you drop the pan, it's like the puppy's on a string and somebody jerks the string, and then the puppy just keeps doing what it was doing.
Right.
Then you know you got your perfect. When you get into the fear period, you see the puppy freeze, mm. crouch, shake. It's a completely different response. So again, you know, normally I have all this time. Well, I did an outcross, and an outcross, which is interesting, Laura, we could talk about this.
Yeah.
That of the type that is almost extinct, because since we can import semen from anywhere, there really are no soon going to be outcrosses anymore, pretty
right.
much, especially in smaller breeds. I mean, I'm not, I tend to line breed, and I tend to go with brackets formula pretty,
mm-hmm.
that's how I breed, but this was a true, true outcross. It was just to a line of dogs that had no common ancestors, probably for 10 generations. So the puppies, they had an alarm bark 2 days after their ears opened.
Wild.
Yeah. I mean, like I would drop things and they would alarm bark and they had definite sustained emotional response. I had to go into another room to do any kind of startle recovery with them. Like their fear response was so early and yeah, it was completely different. So I think that's an example where if you're a breeder, you've been doing this for 20 years, you know, you've had X litters, you know when the fear period should start, you know what you do, you've done it before. And then you do an outcross like this and you get something completely different.
Right.
If you're not attentive to those puppies and you can't override your preconceived knowledge, you can really wind up in trouble with, you know, hurting the puppies instead of helping them.
Absolutely. I'm thinking right now, I had two singleton litters earlier mm-hmm. this year. Talk about nightmares. And one of them came out
oh,
of
come
the
on,
womb.
It's like cheating. It's so easy.
I know, but singletons are hard. They're terribly hard because they have their own little emotional needs. And this was the coolest study. Okay. One puppy, the other puppy born exactly a week apart,
mm-hmm.
raised the second puppy on the first puppy's mother, older, more experienced bitch, very reliable temperament, the whole nine yards, right?
Mm-hmm.
The second puppy that I was raising that was also a singleton was from a completely different bitch line. I've been trying to incorporate a new bitch line. So
okay.
A couple of my stud dogs, like her sire and her grandsire, were stud dogs from my line. But she's very, very different pedigree-wise. And the puppy that was born, that's my bitch line all the way back, literally came out of the womb. It's C-sections, of course, singleton puppies, two C-sections.
Mm-hmm.
Comes
mm-hmm.
out of the womb. He's still attached to the placenta. He is standing up, holding his head up and screaming.
Oh, my God.
Seriously, I'm watching him from the door. I'm like, wow, okay, this is going to be one of those, right? Okay,
yeah.
Second puppy comes along. My vet's up to her shoulder in this bitch, chasing the puppy that she is running away from her in the womb.
Oh, my gosh.
Not lying to you. Yes. And they have been those personalities ever since.
That's crazy.
Raised the same, raised by the same bitch, raised by me, whole nine yards, right? I finally managed to get the second puppy to not hide underneath everything. Like the first puppy would go on top of the stool, she'd go under it, mm-hmm. everything from the beginning. They're just about 5 months old, and I finally mostly have that puppy up to the level of where I would expect.
Which was the one from the bitch line you were trying to incorporate?
The second one. The one that's running away in the womb.
Interesting. And why did you want to incorporate that line? I mean, what was it that you were trying to get from that line?
I love, it's a beautifully line-bred line.
Mm-hmm.
I've shown all of the dogs in the line. I know them well. They're good field dogs. They're solid.
Mm-hmm.
They're not fancy, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But they're mm-hmm. solid, mm-hmm. reliable. They've had good temperaments. I mean, the breeder of this line is someone I know for 25 years. I know everything about this line. I know all the skeletons in the closet. She and I are both looking at this puppy going, I got nothing, man. It's fascinating.
Well, it's just so interesting, though, because when you, and this is something that I think exquisitely difficult for people who are not breeders to understand, is that they're not machines.
No.
And when you're selecting and breeding for one trait,
right,
there's all kinds of caboose stuff that's going to come with that, that are the either tag along with it or the flip sides of that trait, which are not desirable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the example I use is softness,
right,
as opposed to fearfulness. I brought in this line because I have very sweet dogs, but they tend to be sharp with other dogs. I mean, they're bull terriers, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I love to do agility and dog sports, and I wanted to bring some dogs that were a little bit less sharp with other dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that, but I also got some fearfulness and
right.
a little softness that I didn't have. And
right.
it's a fascinating, fascinating study.
Another one that I think is an interesting, and you might appreciate this talking about your outcross, I think certain lines nick well. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this is part of why I had wanted to incorporate this line, because the one breeding I did, I'm like, okay, that nicked pretty well, right? Like, I like
right.
how that pulled together. So
mm-hmm.
I bred that bitch who was out of my stud dog to another one of my stud dogs,
mm-hmm.
thinking, okay, this is, I need, you know, Bill Shelton talks about having a second family line, a second bitch
right.
line to help build,
right.
you know, diversity so that you can line breed
yeah,
within your own
back
line.
In. Right. Yeah.
And I like this bitch. I like a lot of things about this bitch, but watching her grow up has been absolutely fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. I wished I had...
Completely different experience, huh?
Very. I wished I had done like a full-on study, right? Like documented this, because it has been truly, truly fascinating. And I'm going back to puppy culture now that we've kind of wandered off into the weeds here.
Right. Yeah. But it's all connected.
It is all connected. And I think that this crowdsourcing thing we talk about, our listeners can understand, they can apply to their own situation. I now, having watched this bitch grow up for the last 5 months, wish that I had had some more of the puppy culture information to apply to her, just to give me more tools in my toolbox, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because she's like a whole new thing. I've got nothing.
I understand. Well, a couple things on that. One is the tools, and the second is the crowdsourcing.
Right.
So the tools, the workbook actually does have all these worksheets where you can record all
mm-hmm.
of this. So
mm-hmm.
as you go through all the protocols, you record how each puppy, and we have a whole, I'll say scoring system, but just notation system, like, you know, do they need more work? Did they achieve it?
Right.
So you get to record when you did each protocol, how it turned out. Then also we have all the developmental milestones that we talk about in the book. We have a checklist for them. So you can put down what date. The goal is, over time as a breeder, this becomes, as I say, your breeder's gold. This is what you can look back on and say, aha, I see this pattern. When I did this, this happens and stuff. And you're going to, I mean, this data, it's, some breeders do have a system for recording it, but puppy culture would have, having the workbook in particular, would have given you a chance to do that even more.
Well, to document this would have been really interesting. And I think this is, I am such a throwback to my mother's generation of breeding, right? And it's all in your head. Like, my mother had everything in her head.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
But those are the people. But okay, so then that's the second thing I wanted to say to you, is that those days, so sadly, are gone.
I know.
You know, it used to be you want to breed dogs, you'd go to your local kennel club, there would be people there, you know, people with just this wisdom that they would sit with you and give you.
Right.
And they bred dogs and they bred a lot of dogs. And that is just gone 100%. So again, puppy culture is trying to sort of, nothing can take the place of that, but it's sort of trying to step into the void of, okay, well, let's all get together and crowdsource this. And that's what this is. It's, we call it your mentor in a box, but it really is a lot of that that you just can't get from people like your mother. It's trying to get that out of their heads before they're gone and put it on paper.
Here I am at Pure Dog Talk, honey, doing the same thing.
Exactly.
You know, the thing is, this is so fascinating to me. Again, think about this. Puppy culture, Pure Dog Talk, Leading Edge, Allison Foley, Lee Whittier, dog show mentor, right? All of these, the Show Dog Prep School that Vicky Ronchetti is doing, all of these, think about this for a minute, Jane. We're all women of a certain age.
Right.
Okay.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, a certain age. And we all have this past experience, and we all discovered this gaping hole in the sport, and we all said, gee, let's try and fill it. And I love it.
So fun. I know.
I do. Yeah. And one of my missions at Pure Dog Talk is to make sure that all of us in this group are able to reach out to the fancy to get this information out there.
Absolutely. That's, it truly is what it's all about. I mean, I think that all of the examples you cite are people who have a true passion for what they do and a true love for what they do and are doing it for a living, but truly with the overarching goal of passing it on to the next generation. And as I say, infecting the next generation with our enthusiasm.
Yes. And I'm sorry, just because you charge for something doesn't mean that you aren't passionate. That,
that
is such a fallacy.
Listen, you have to afford to be passionate.
Yeah,
you can't be passionate if you can't pay your bills. Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Passion does not pay my Visa bill, honey.
Nope.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, Jane, I very much look forward to continuing this conversation in the coming months.
That is going to be great.
Yes. I know our listeners are going to be thrilled if I could tell you how many of them have begged me to get on it and get this conversation started. So thank you.
Thank you so much. It's an honor.
Well, it is a pleasure, and I have quite enjoyed it and look forward to it more. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.